Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. ESG, or Environmental, Social, Governance, promises to help the bottom line and the planet at the same time. Is it too good to be true? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of an episode digging into that very question.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. President Donald Trump will not commit to a peaceful transition of power after Election Day. He said as much yesterday.
There has been rioting in Louisville. There's been rioting in many cities across this country, red and your so-called red and blue states. Will you commit to making sure that there is a peaceful transfer of power after the election?
Well, we're going to have to see what happens. You know that I've been complaining very strongly about the ballots, and the ballots are a disaster.
People are rioting. Do you commit to making sure that there's a peaceful transfer of power?
We want to get rid of the ballots, and you'll have a very peaceful. There won't be a transfer, frankly. There'll be a continuation. The ballots are out of control. You know it. And you know who knows it better than anybody else? The Democrats know it better than anybody else. Go ahead.
That's the president yesterday in Washington. Bertrall Ross is a law professor at the University of California, Berkeley. He's an expert in elections and election security. He also served on an interdisciplinary team of researchers and experts called the Ad Hoc Committee for 2020 Election Fairness and Legitimacy. And in April of this year, that committee published a report titled Fair Elections During a Crisis: Urgent Recommendations in Law, Media, Politics, and Tech to Advance the Legitimacy of and the confidence in the November 2020 U.S. elections. Now, we spoke with Professor Ross back in May, and in that show, he walked us through all the areas of major concern for the November vote, and pretty much everything he said then has since become a reality. So he is back with us now. Professor Ross, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you so much, Meghna. It's great to be back.
Did you anticipate a president of the United States not committing to a peaceful transfer of power as one of the issues to be concerned about regarding November 3rd?
Prior to 2016, no. But this fits within a pattern of President Trump, as he made similar suggestions, not with respect to the transfer of power, but with respect to the acceptance of results in the 2016 campaign season. I think that this is just represents a sort of bullying of the American voter. Most people are conflict averse. They do not want to experience conflict. And what the president seems to be saying is that you can avoid conflict. You can avoid any troubles after the election by, you know, simply voting for me or staying at home and allowing me to continue in power. And that is a dangerous and troubling precedent that this president is setting. And it raises many concerns with respect to this election and what's going to happen afterwards.
Your point about similar language in 2016 is well taken, Professor Ross. And at the same time, that was then candidate Trump. Now it's right. President Trump. He is in the White House. He has the power of the federal government ostensibly at his disposal. How dangerous is it that it seems like there's one answer. There's one answer to that question. Yes, I will commit to a peaceful transfer of power because it's a cornerstone of our democracy. How dangerous is it that he doesn't want to give that answer?
In every developed and mature democracy, that is the only answer. I will accept the results. The threat is huge. You have the federal government that's at the disposal of the president with respect to fighting to allow him to hold on to power. You have a degree of loyalty that's been evidenced in Congress from Republican Congress members that raises questions as to whether they'll challenge his claim to authority, even if he loses the election. And you have courts that include hundreds of appointees by the president that may be willing to go along. We hope not. We hope our democracy is developed enough that we will force a president who has lost an election out of power. But there is no guarantee in 2020, and that is extraordinarily worrying. Mm.
There are always people who say, and powerful people in Washington, who say, it's not what he says, it's what he does. This is just another one of those off-the-cuff things. Would you take stock in any of those arguments or those responses to what the president said yesterday?
No, because what he says is extremely important. And what he says is something, again, that poses concerns for the American voter. Trying to influence voters to make decisions on the basis of maintaining a democracy in place by allowing a person to continue in power for that reason. And I think that, you know, those words are quite damaging to our system of voting and elections. And I would take them quite seriously if I were the American voter. Sure, there are other instances in which he has walked back claims that he has made, the more outlandish claims that he's made on a variety of issues. But I think with respect to this issue and how vehemently he is fighting to stay in power, it is something that we must take seriously. We can't just dismiss as Trump talk. We must take seriously. And we just don't know in terms of what's motivating this serious desire to stay in power. It could be that this is just Trump doesn't like losing. It could be fear of the legal implications of losing. There are a lot of legal actions in states that are pose threats to President Trump that when he becomes a citizen become more legal, greater legal threats for him. And so that desire to stay in power could be motivated by many different factors that could lead Trump talk to being action. And if he does pursue this action, it could be create a dangerous scenario for our democracy.
There's also the specificity of what the president said, right? I'm looking at a transcript here. It's a bunch of sort of half phrases, but he says, get rid of the ballots and you'll have a very transfer. You'll have a peaceful, there won't be a transfer, frankly, there'll be a continuation. Get rid of the ballots. Now, he's been consistently critical and spreading misinformation about mail-in voting. What do you make about the fact that he focused in on ballots then in that moment yesterday too?
Yeah. I wonder if it was merely a slip of the tongue, and you know he meant to simply refer to mail-in ballots, but it accords with his broad view of voting and elections and the legitimacy of voting and elections as reflected in his delegitimizing the vote count in 2016, not the Electoral College count, but the vote count, which put Hillary Clinton ahead by 2 to 3 million votes. And he is doing the same thing with respect to ballots in this election. I think that there's a recognition that he is very likely to lose a popular vote. There's still opportunity to win the Electoral College vote. But the idea is to delegitimize mail-in ballots with the idea that, you know, what the results are on election day as they're counting ballots, even as they're in the process of counting ballots, even if the results haven't been determined, wherever the votes stand on election day, you know, what the hope is and what he's banking on is that he'll be ahead. And that, of course, will not account for all the mail-in ballots. But if he is ahead at that point, it will give him an opportunity to declare himself winner and to continue with his delegitimizing of mail-in ballots as a means to stay in power. It seems part of a broader troubling strategy that Republicans and the president has decided to pursue.
Now, later in this hour, we're going to talk to two secretaries of state who are charged with seeing through a fair election in their states, and we'll talk with them about the challenges they face. But Professor Ross, for everybody listening to this right now, Republican, Democratic, Independent, just for every American voter who cares about the strength and functioning of our democracy, what would you recommend that they do upon hearing the president and what he said yesterday? What is it that the American voter ought to do their part to preserve the legitimacy and stability of our democracy?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think that one of the difficulties in a pandemic is to feel comfortable and safe with respect to voting. And I think that with the threats to legitimacy of mail-in ballots, one of the things that have been urged by many is that we need people, if they can, if they feel comfortable doing so, to vote in person. voting in person, there will not be a threat or challenges to the legitimacy of individuals voting in person and their ballots being counted. And that could be a way, in a sense, to ensure that your ballot will be counted and will be considered as part of the decision-making process for who's elected president of the United States. So that's one thing. And I don't want to recommend this with respect to those who feel uncomfortable, who have health conditions that make it difficult to vote and make it unsafe to vote. But I think that that's one of the things to vote early, to, in a sense, flatten the voting curve so that you do not have to experience or there are fewer longer lines to experience so that your ballot can be counted.
So let me just jump in here for a second, because this is exactly one of the things that you told us back in May, many months ago, 4 months ago, about building voter confidence in the election process. So I just want to remind you what you said back then. Here's what you said.
One thing is early voting and advertising and educating people on the opportunities for early voting.
So that was back in May, and I'm wondering what you think now about efforts of voter education. Has that happened in the subsequent 4 months?
Yeah,
satisfaction. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that there has been considerable progress and considerable efforts that states and campaigns are making with respect to educating voters, with respect to coming up with a voter plan. To coming up with a plan for how to approach voting in this particular unusual election. And part of the plan is voting earlier or understanding the laws in your state in the extent to which they provide opportunities to vote early. And what we know is that 40 states provide some means, at least 40 states provide some means by which you can vote early. There's also a plan that's coming up with how to sort of cast an absentee ballot and casting absentee ballots early if you can. There's two parts to, in a sense, flattening the voter curve to avoid a surge on election day that could result in delayed results. And one of which is voting early, and the other of which is processing ballots. And it's the latter that continues to raise concerns.
Well, Professor Bertrall Ross, stand by here for just a moment. We are talking about what it will take to secure the public's confidence in the legitimacy of the 2020 election. When we come back, we're going to hear from secretaries of state in two American states. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken? A podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. A recent episode featured a debate about ESG, or environmental social governance.
This sounds like more work than just putting your money into a social impact fund.
It's a lot more work.
Yeah.
Anybody who thinks there's an easy solution here is either engaged in puffery, greenwash, or deceiving themselves.
Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the episode.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We are talking this hour about what needs to be done in order to secure the public's confidence in the 2020 election. I'm joined today by Bertrall Ross. He is the Chancellor's Professor of Law at the University of California, Berkeley, an expert in elections and election security, and a member of the Ad Hoc Committee for 2020 Election Fairness and Legitimacy. He joins us from Berkeley, California. And joining us now from Denver, Colorado, is Jenna Griswold. Ms. Griswold is the Secretary of State for the state of Colorado. Secretary Griswold, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So first of all, tell me, how challenging has it been so far getting ready for Election Day 2020?
Well, I will say Colorado started in a really good spot because the Colorado election model is so accessible. We have online voter registration, early voting, in-person, same-day voter registration, and then the key, we send a ballot to every registered voter. So we were actually able to set a record turnout in the middle of the pandemic for our state primary, and we hope to replicate that again.
Every ballot gets sent automatically to registered Colorado voters.
That's right.
Okay. Well, so, but that ran into, it's not the Colorado system that ran into a hiccup, but there were some issues with a mailer that the U.S. Postal Service sent out. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, the U.S. Postal Service sent out a mailer that had incorrect information for Colorado and other states that are vote-by-mail for all states. It automatically sends out a ballot. And I think it's really important to communicate correct information, especially on elections, in an election that has been so full of misinformation. So we successfully took the U.S. Postal Service to court to restrain them from further sending out information. By the way, we won another restraining order, a multi-state litigation, and the Postmaster General gave us assurances that the post office is ready to go and will make sure that all the ballots are delivered. So overall, we love having the assurances from the Postmaster General, but of course, actions speak louder than words. We're 2-0 when it comes to litigation, and I'll make sure that the actions from the Postmaster General meets up with the assurances and the words.
Right. So just to be clear, these mailers that the USPS sent out, they're sending out not just in Colorado, right, and other places. And it said that it gave deadlines for having to request ballots, but those deadlines did not apply in Colorado. Do I have that right?
So there were two issues with the postcard. One was a suggestion that you had to request an absentee ballot. That's not how Colorado works. We believe that every registered voter should be sent a mail ballot straight to their home. And the second was a wrong deadline for returning the mail ballot in the mail. And this was very concerning to me because there are places in Southwest Colorado where the mail just takes a little longer on average. It has nothing to do with this year. And that's where both of the tribes located in Colorado reside. So I just think it's so important for communities that have been historically disenfranchised to not put up more barriers and to send out correct information. So that's why we were so quick in filing the restraining order, winning the restraining order, and making sure that bad information from the United States Postal Service doesn't reach more doors in Colorado.
Okay, so tell me again then, Secretary Griswold, about all the ways in which Colorado has tried to make voting as accessible as possible to Coloradans. And are all those ways working as we get closer and closer to November?
Well, I think in just a couple of minutes, we don't have enough time to list all the ways. But the base of the Colorado election model is safe, secure, and accessible, easy elections. You register to vote, you're sent a mail ballot, and then you can return it to one of hundreds of drop boxes. By the way, I've increased drop boxes by 49% as Secretary of State. You can return it through the mail or even go return it in person or even vote in person. So we believe in accessible elections. Last year, I was really proud to work with our legislature to pass the Colorado Votes Act, where we added even more access, more voting locations, more drop boxes, and guaranteed for the first time a polling center or drop box on every public university and on tribal lands. And then we do voter outreach. There's a huge list. And going into the pandemic, we even went further. So we sent PPE to all the counties, made sure that in-person voting was as safe as possible through election rules, and are doing outreach through and partnering with historically suppressed communities to make sure that all communities understand what's on the line and their rights.
And ideally, all of these efforts would lead to healthy turnout numbers in Colorado. Have you seen that in elections past?
Absolutely. So we are the number one state in terms of eligible people registered to vote, and we're always number one or number two for turnout. And I don't think this year will be any different. What is different is that we have a president who's deciding that he is not playing by the rules of a democracy. And I listened to the beginning of the show and the professor's comments. I urge voters to vote early and vote their mail ballot if they have access. The president isn't only attacking mail ballots. He's setting up a series of traps to basically contest any form of voting. So what I believe Americans need to do is make a plan to vote, vote early, and really show up. Hopefully showing up means voting safely from the security of your home, especially during a pandemic. I think the expansion of vote by mail for all is so important. But overall, just having your voice heard, this election is so crucial to our nation. And even in the pandemic, we need to make sure that, a lot of people cast their ballots.
How much has some of what the president said and tweeted? I mean, earlier he had tweeted about encouraging people in North Carolina to vote twice. You responded to the president's tweet, and you said this is encouraging voter fraud. I will refer you real Donald Trump for prosecution if warranted. I mean, is it even when his tweets are specific to other states? Is it making your job in Colorado harder?
Well, I think the president is purposefully trying to chip away at confidence. Whether it's lies about vote by mail to litigation on the use of drop boxes to him admitting that he was attacking the U.S. Postal Service to try to stop mail ballots in an attempt to decrease Democratic voter turnout, he's doing everything that he can to either attack the elections or undermine it. So in a sense, it is harder because we have to push back against lies about elections. We have to push to try to grip our democracy, make sure that Americans have confidence. And I think, just so undemocratic, so un-American that a president of the United States would use his position, his power, to try to tilt an election in his favor. But that's where we are. And I think it's really important that everybody pushes back against the lies and makes their voice heard in this upcoming election. I have full confidence in the elections in Colorado. We're at a really good place with the United States Postal Service. And like I mentioned, if we come to a place where we're not in a good place anymore, I'm 2-0 in that litigation. And I'll always fight to make sure Americans have access to the polls and their votes counted fairly.
So, Secretary Griswold, hang on here for just a moment. Let me turn back to Professor Ross and just get his response to a little bit about what you're hearing. How do you think, or what's your assessment of how elections are handled in Colorado, Professor Ross?
Colorado is one of the gold standard states in terms of elections. They have a mail-in ballot system that provides for, as the Secretary of State mentioned, for automatic access to the ballots that they're sent to the voters. And this is a model that other states are trying to follow in a very short amount of time. The challenge has been legislative gridlock, political gridlock, the unwillingness of Republican legislatures in certain states to pass laws that would provide for easier access to ballots. But the Brookings Institute has issued a report describing, sort of giving a scorecard for different states. And, you know, Colorado is one of the A states that other states are seeking to mirror. But the problem is there are, you know, about 25 to 30 states that are C or below. And so it demonstrates that there's a lot of work to be done, probably not enough time to do that work. But to the extent that they can follow the model of Colorado and Washington and states like that, there's an opportunity to have a successful election with as few headaches as possible after the fact.
Any disadvantages or steps yet to be taken that you'd like to see in Colorado?
With Colorado, I think that one of the challenges is what Secretary of State has mentioned is conflicting information about how to vote. And it's not the fault of the Secretary of State's office. It's the fault of federal government, the United States Postal Service. And so one of the challenges is to make sure that the voters have the information and aren't deterred by the misinformation that they're receiving. And so, you know, to the extent that I don't know what extent that the state of Colorado and Secretary of State's office is doing this public information campaign to clear up any misinformation. But that, I think, is the important task that's ahead.
Secretary Griswold, do you want to respond to that?
Absolutely. I'm glad the professor is giving us an A. I feel like a good student, but just really proud of Colorado's election model. In terms of trying to counter the misinformation coming out of the White House to foreign countries trying to undermine the elections, it's a bit like playing whack-a-mole, and you have to just keep on hitting the misinformation and putting truth out. We are going to be running a voter engagement series, both over digital television, to make sure that Colorado voters know their rights. Another thing that we're doing is pushing out voter registration, paid voting, well, potential voter engagement. Voter registration is down with the pandemic. And like I mentioned, we partner with all different groups. We're working with the tribes in Colorado to hire someone from that community to engage tribal members on registering to vote. We're going to be engaging with partners in the homeless community to make sure that Coloradans experiencing homelessness have their right to vote known. So you really need to lean in and communicate effectively. But I will say it's really important to underline that we need more states like Colorado or Washington. You know, the fact that you may live in a state like Georgia and Alabama and have less of a right than if you live in Colorado or Washington is not how constitutional rights should work. That's why I'm so enthusiastic about expanding vote by mail for all, early voting, same day voter registration. All Americans deserve to have access to safe elections, and elections where they don't have to risk their health in the middle of a pandemic. It's 2020. The era of long lines, standing in line until 12:30 in the morning should be over. And I'm hopeful that after this election, the nation will continue this conversation about how we respect Americans' constitutional rights.
So can you take us a little bit into the more into the machinery of how it works in Colorado? Because I think it's absolutely fascinating. First of all, at what point in time do you start counting mail ballots, for example?
So we start processing mail ballots 15 days before Election Day. And I've been working with other secretaries of state since March trying to share Colorado's election model, because not only do we have vote by mail for all, which is the safe way, the responsible way to vote during a pandemic, we do signature cures on mail ballots. We have the lowest signature discrepancy rate in the nation. And we do things like processing ballots so far ahead of time. So that in our state primary, we were able to report 89% of all ballots on election night. And the majority of Coloradans, by the way, even with early voting options, decided to use that mail ballot at 99.3% of all ballots being cast either through the mail or at a drop box. But I do think it's important to underline, as media leaders and local leaders, that the idea that if ballots are not counted on election night, that doesn't mean they're no good. Election night results are never final results. Overseas and military voters have days after the election to get their ballot in. Many voters in many states, if there's any discrepancy, have the chance to fix their vote in the days after the election. And this is just one of the ways that the president is trying to add uncertainty into the election by suggesting that ballots not counted on election day are somehow no good. That is false. And we need to make sure that Americans know that that is false and that ballots are never final on election night.
Yeah. Now, Secretary Griswold, really about more into the machinery here, because I understand that in Colorado, what even when it comes to transporting the ballots and verifying them, bipartisan teams do this in secure rooms where people can watch through windows.
That's exactly right. We have just really strong chain of custody. We make sure that we have security measures in place. We're considered the safest state to cast a ballot in. And by the way, that's not just the liberal media saying that. President Trump's former DHS secretary also commended Colorado for leading the nation in security. So we can, as a nation, have accessible elections during a pandemic, secure elections, and have Americans be able to vote from the safety of their home. You know, vote by mail is like wearing a mask. We can have our voices heard at the ballot box in a safe way. I also think it's worth noting that when we adopted the vote by mail for all system, we increased turnout by 9%, evenly among registered Democrats and Republicans. But it's noteworthy to see that we had a 13% increase among Black voters, a 10% increase among Latino voters, and a 16% increase among young voters. So we can have safe elections, accessible elections, and boost turnout all through vote by mail for all. We need it nationwide, along with early voting and same day voter registration.
Hmm. I'm seeing here that in addition, both election judges and computers check the signatures or verify the signatures on against state registries that are on the ballots, and no single person or party controls any portion of this process, but it comes together and seems to work very well in Colorado. And with that in mind, just one last question for you, Secretary Griswold. Do you anticipate, or when do you anticipate being able to announce a result from Colorado? Because one of the things that we've been talking about repeatedly on this show is the need for the American people to learn to wait or to perhaps not get a result on the night of November 3rd.
So we will post the results as soon as the ballots are counted. So in Colorado, it's typical, it's normal that all results are not posted on election day. But what we are doing is allowing more people to have their voice heard in an accessible and secure way. You know, on one hand, we have all the misinformation coming from the president, and the scary that we're just in this time where we have a president of the United States suggesting a power grab. On the other hand, we're also facing cyber attacks and foreign countries trying to undermine our democracy. Vote by mail is not only accessible, it's the securest way to stop cyber attacks. You can't hack a mail ballot. So just have a little patience this election. We're going to have secure and accessible elections. Just might take a little longer.
Well, Jenna Griswold is the Secretary of State for Colorado, joining us from Denver. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Professor Bertrall Ross, hang on here for just a second. We'll have a lot more when we come back, including the Secretary of State from Washington State. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, On Point listeners. I'm poet and author Shinyi Pai. As you celebrate Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month, I invite you to listen to the 10,000 Things podcast from KUOW and the NPR Network. 10,000 Things is a podcast about modern artifacts of Asian American life, ordinary objects that tell extraordinary stories and reveal something profound about the experience of being Asian in America. Find 10,000 Things from KUOW and the NPR Network, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Tomorrow on the show, we're going to be speaking with Boston Globe reporter Mark Shanahan about his experience with prostate cancer. It's a common disease, not often enough discussed. So we want to know about your stories about if you or a loved one have had prostate cancer. What do you want people to know about it? Tell us your story at 617-353-0683. That's 617-353-0683. That's for the program tomorrow. Today, we are talking about what it's going to take to secure the public's confidence in the legitimacy of the 2020 election. I'm joined by Bertrall Ross. He's a professor of law at the University of California, Berkeley, expert in elections and election security, and a member of a group called the Ad Hoc Committee for 2020 Election Fairness and Legitimacy. They wrote a report about what it will take to secure the legitimacy of the vote. That report was published back in April. We had him on the show in May, and everything he told us since then has pretty much come true. So that's why we have decided to bring Professor Ross back to talk about the work left to be done between now and November to secure the legitimacy of the election. And in the process of preparing for this show, there was news out of the state of Pennsylvania, where a recent ruling by the state Supreme Court there further complicated that state's mail-in ballot system. So let's just listen to a moment of a report from David Kaplan, a local reporter at WTAE-TV in Pittsburgh.
All ballots in all counties have three key components. The ballot itself, a nondescript secrecy envelope that says official election ballot on it, and the outer envelope that you'll sign and date and send. If your ballot is not inside the secrecy envelope, otherwise called a naked ballot, it can't be counted.
In June, we did count the naked ballots. For the general election after the state Supreme Court ruling, we are not able to count the naked ballots.
Melanie Ostrander is Washington County's Director of Elections. In the June primary, nearly 5% of Washington County's ballots didn't have a secrecy envelope.
So that's a portion of a report from David Kaplan of WTAE-TV in Pittsburgh about the recent Pennsylvania State Supreme Court ruling. Professor Ross, I mean, Kaplan, they're talking about how 5% of ballots in one county in Pennsylvania wouldn't be able to be counted under these following this ruling. And what impact do you think that might have?
It could potentially have an extraordinary impact. I've seen some prediction numbers suggesting that there could be up to 100,000 ballots that aren't counted. And when you consider the fact that President Trump won Pennsylvania by 44,000 votes in 2016, those 100,000 ballots could be quite meaningful on Election Day. So the impact is potentially huge, and it's going to be up to the state of Pennsylvania to do the work to educate the voters to lower the numbers of naked ballots that will not be counted. Mm.
Okay, so Professor Ross, hang on here for a moment because we want to now turn to the state of Washington. And Kim Wyman joins us. She is the Secretary of State for Washington with us from Olympia. Secretary Wyman, welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
So Washington, another one of the sort of pioneering states in terms of vote by mail. Can you tell us, first of all, about how it works in Washington and why you believe people in that state and quite frankly around the country, but especially in Washington, should have confidence in their system of voting?
Well, here in Washington, very similar system to Colorado in that we mail ballots to every eligible registered voter 18 days before Election Day, and they have that period of time to return the ballot, and that needs to be returned with a valid postmark or dropped into a ballot drop box by 8 o'clock election night. So during that voting period, our counties are receiving ballots, and 10 days before Election Day, they can begin processing those, meaning they're checking every signature against the signature on file for the voter registration record. They are opening that outer envelope and removing the voter's name from the security sleeve or envelope that is included with their materials, and then removing the ballot from that security sleeve, getting those ballots flattened out and ready to be processed, and doing any kind of adjudication if the ballot can't be counted because, you know, the voter ate a hamburger while they were voting and it got ketchup on it and we couldn't put it through the reader. We get those ballots ready, and then at 8 p.m. on election night, they actually hit the button to count and tabulate those votes, and we report them.
So you're talking about, you mentioned two sleeves for each of these ballots, similar to what we just talked about regarding Pennsylvania. But if the voter forgets to put the ballot in the security sleeve, do you have to reject those ballots?
Not as of the moment. In Washington State, the counties do have protocols when that happens, and they take, you know, great steps to insert the ballot that is just in that outer mailing envelope into a security sleeve and put it in the pile with the other ballots, maintaining that voter secrecy and respecting that voter secrecy. We certainly are trying not to disenfranchise anyone whose signature was validated and was a valid voter. But again, the counties have those protocols in place. And so, no, right now in Washington State, those ballots would still be processed.
Okay. And as of this point in time, have there been any legal challenges to those protocols? Because that's essentially what happened in Pennsylvania.
That's the first I'd heard of it was when you reported that a moment ago. So as of right now, no, we haven't seen that legal challenge. But like everything with the 2020 election, I imagine if it happens in one state, we may see it in other states. Hmm. So we'll be watching.
Now, about the effectiveness of offering mail-in balloting or all mail-in balloting for voters in Washington, I'm seeing here some remarkable numbers about the percent of registered voters who actually voted in presidential election years. In Washington, in certain election cycles, it's been north of 80%, 82, 84% in 2008. So it works.
Oh, absolutely. I think one of the strengths of a vote by mail system is that accessibility element. And by giving every single voter in our state a ballot that they can vote on their terms when it's convenient for them is just really empowering for voters. And we've had almost 10 years to really build out our security controls. So I have very high confidence that even though we're expanding accessibility widely, we are also making sure that the people whose ballots are counted are eligible and that only one ballot is counted, even if we've given more than one ballot to a voter.
Okay. Now, you recently wrote an article in which you talked about the safeguards in place in Washington state, and you said that time is short for states to build the kinds of safeguards and processes Washington and others have made over the years. But we can use this opportunity to guide states' efforts to ramp up their own systems so that maybe in the future, as soon as 2024, we won't have debates that end up distracting and confusing voters. So obviously 2020 is out of the picture now for helping states get to where Washington is. But you really think we could do it by 2024?
You know, it's going to require the political will on both parties to have the conversations and tough conversations and write laws and make changes that take into account the concerns of voter fraud and the concerns of voter suppression. And that's what's always going to result in the best laws and lawmaking is when we have that bipartisan agreement. And that's a heavy lift in this era of really polarized politics. But I'm optimistic that we as Americans can rise above that and figure out what's going to work best as a country to ensure that every voice is heard and that we don't have fraud and we don't have suppression.
So, Professor Ross, do you share that potential optimism that following this election cycle, more states would want to adopt systems like we've been hearing about in Washington and Colorado?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Secretary of State that the political will is going to be absolutely key. It's taken states that have gone to all mail-in balloting some time to perfect their systems and to get them into the place that Colorado and Washington are in. And so we shouldn't be delusional about the idea that this is going to happen quickly. But I do have hopes that there is a political will that and the work begins immediately that we can get ourselves in the position that Washington and Colorado are in other states by 2024. But it's going to take a lot of work and, again, a lot of and bipartisan political will.
So, Secretary Wyman, let me turn back to you. You were the Secretary of State for Washington. In presidential election cycles, it tends to go blue. But you're the Republican Secretary of State for Washington. And the headline, by the way, for this piece that you wrote is, I'm the Republican Secretary of State in Washington, and I believe voting by mail works. So once again, I just want to play this moment from the President of the United States yesterday and what he said about the transition of power and about balloting.
There has been rioting in Louisville. There's been rioting in many cities across this country, red and your so-called red and blue states. Will you commit to making sure that there is a peaceful transfer of power after the election?
Well, we're going to have to see what happens. You know that I've been complaining very strongly about the ballots, and the ballots are a disaster.
I understand that, but people are rioting. Do you commit to making sure that there's a peaceful transfer of power?
We want to get rid of the ballots, and there won't be a transfer, frankly. There'll be a continuation. The ballots are out of control. You know it. And you know who knows it better than anybody else? The Democrats know it better than anybody else. Go ahead.
So that's the president yesterday. Secretary Wyman, as a member of the Republican Party, you're a member of the Republican Party. What would you tell the president? I mean, he's the head of the party. What would you tell the president about what he's saying here regarding ballots?
Well, first and foremost, I think what I would want to say to the public is understand that we have over 10,000 election officials like myself who are either appointed or elected, who answer to their voters and their constituents in their jurisdictions and conduct elections on their behalf. And that we are working very hard to ensure that we have the most accessible and most secure election that our country has ever conducted. It is not lost on any one of us the stakes that are in this election and how important it is for all of us to do our jobs well. And so that is first and foremost in my mind, that people need to understand that there's going to be political posturing, there are going to be lawsuits filed on both sides, and people are going to grandstand greatly about the security or the accessibility of this election. And in large part, that grandstanding is to set up doubt in case they lose. And so what I would say to my party is what I've said to Democratic people who I've talked to and party members, that, you know, let election officials do their job and do it well. And that's what we're committed to doing, is having an accurate and fair election. And the way you do that is balancing access and security. And to the president's comments, we are not conducting an election that is in any way frivolous and or meaningless. These ballots all mean something. They are the voices of every eligible American who's casting a ballot. And this process has been set up for, you know, many, many years. And we are going to ensure that we carry out the duties to the Constitution, to federal law that applies to elections, and the state laws that we each have to follow in our own jurisdictions.
Secretary Wyman, I hear what you're saying, but if I may, the president of the United States is telling people not to trust the very work that you're doing. He's telling people the ballots are a problem. I mean, certainly that's got – does that not – do you think more Republicans should stand up and tell the president, this is not helping? It's not helping the Republican Party. It's not helping American democracy.
Well, yes, and it's a difficult line I have to walk as the chief election officer, as well as a partisanly elected official, you know, and taking the and owning the comments of members of my party, including the president, and I will say what I have already said to President Trump and to Attorney General Barr, that the concerns that they have, I would be happy to personally address. I would love to walk the president through what we do here in Washington, what states that conduct absentee or vote by mail elections do to secure ballots, and the processes that are in place. And, you know, I think we really need to take a deep breath and talk about those administrative processes that are designed to protect not only the integrity of the process, but to inspire confidence in both the winning and losing side of any election. So I really do wish that the president would talk to election officials like myself across the country, and let's allay his fears, and let's get back down to, you know, the job of he can run a campaign and we'll run the election, and then we can move forward.
Well, Kim Wyman is the Secretary of State for the state of Washington. Secretary Wyman, thank you so very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Okay, Professor Ross, we got about 2 minutes left here and under 6 weeks to go. We're out of time to institute, obviously, the kinds of systems that we've heard about in Colorado and Washington. But are there any steps left that states could take to further encourage confidence, the public's confidence in the November vote?
I think that what states can do and what secretary of states can do, like the two secretary of states that came on the program today, is to get out in front of the public and explain their processes in the way that these two secretary of states have so articulately and well and have done so well. And I think that that information will give individuals confidence. It's not someone in the back room who is a party hack that's counting these ballots and engaging in problematic behavior. Instead, it's a set up process designed to ensure the integrity of the election. And I think that that public information, public education campaign is going to be critical to giving Americans confidence in the election to come.
So the public information campaign, and then to circle back to where we began, what about the day after? Or the weeks after?
Yeah, the day after and the weeks after, it would be if we had systems that allowed for the processing of ballots before Election Day, like Colorado and Washington do in more states, I think that we could limit the amount of delay in election results. But to the extent that we have delay in election results and contesting of the election, what we're going to need is our leaders in Congress, our leaders in states, a bipartisan group coming together and making clear that the election results are legitimate and that we need to stand by them and we need to move forward however the election turns out, whether it's President Trump being reelected or candidate Biden being declared president. We need a bipartisan group to stand up and resist any efforts to either maintain power despite the results or try to attain power despite the results.
Bertrall Ross is the Chancellor's Professor of Law at the University of California, Berkeley, member of a group called the Ad Hoc Committee for 2020 Election Fairness and Legitimacy. It's an interdisciplinary group that back in April put out a lengthy report about fair elections during a crisis. Professor Ross, thank you for coming back on the show once again.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be on.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes.
Can Profit Motive Save the Planet? Is a company that takes the climate into account a better investment? How about one that pays workers a living wage and champions transparency and board diversity? That's the idea of ESG, or Environmental Social Governance.
Sounds like a wonderful story. You can make more money, you can save the planet at the same time. Almost no one is going to turn that down.
It's a story that Andy King of Questrom and Veet Henish of the Wharton School challenged during a recent event at Questrom. Professor King played the critic, who says these are problems for regulation to solve, not markets.
As a famous economist said to me, you can't fix externalities with the profit motive, because the profit motive is not linked to externalities. Externalities are the byproduct of pursuing profits. So you can't fix them by getting people to even look harder at profits.
Meanwhile, Veet emphasized that ESG can be an important part of the solution.
Regulation matters, and we need better regulation. And we need to reallocate trillions of dollars of capital over time to the climate transition alone, forgetting social justice, racial justice, and other ESG issues. We're going to need the profit motive for that. No government regulation is going to reallocate tens of trillions of dollars of capital alone. It's going to be investors who are looking at current government regulation and future government regulation and trying to connect the dots.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.